Early in his life, Dacre Stoker never thought he'd be going into the family business. He was raised in Montreal and taught at Appleby College in Ontario before moving to the U.S. He was a member of the Canadian men's pentathlon team and coached the team at the 1988 Summer Olympics. So with all that, how did he become the keeper of the Bram Stoker estate and the legacy of Count Dracula?
Well, it was a little bit by default. Bram was one of seven children. Only three of them had offspring. He had a son, the son had a daughter, and then the Stoker name in that family has died out. But Bram's youngest brother, George Stoker, had a son, Tom, who moved to Canada after World War I. That's how my branch of the Stoker started. And I was sort of on this genealogy quest, God, about 15 years ago, trying to figure out all the connections between George, my dad, and his other brothers. And one of my father's brothers was sort of slowly dying of a heart disease. And he said, Dacre, you seem to be interested. I need to give you access to all this material. And being the eldest son and the eldest Stoker, he was the guy that received all this stuff. There's boxes of things in a storage unit in Montreal. My wife and I went up there with the laptop and our scanner, and we scanned all sorts of cool things, and we just thought, you know, this is really too good to let go. And if we did, there'd be another generation in our family that wouldn't know what was really going on or what the connections were between George Stoker and us.
Is the character of Dracula in public domain now, or is that still owned by the family?
No, really there's nothing still owned by the family besides unpublished work that anybody finds of Bram's. The novel is in public domain. The character is in public domain. The film rights, I even believe, have expired. Bram's widow sold those a long time ago. So we, as the family, don't make a penny on any royalties nowadays, although we did find in one of his cousin's attic a journal of Bram's. And since that had not been published, I did publish this, edited it with a Dr. Elizabeth Miller called Bram Stoker's Lost Journal. That came out in 2012. And that has a 25-year period of protection under the Berne Convention. And so we are collecting royalties from that one book, but it's mostly because me and Dr. Elizabeth Miller deciphered it and actually made comments on it. But otherwise, the family made good money back in the day. But the current vampire craze, or let's just say the last 123 years of vampire craze, we're not profiting on. It's really a labor of love and deep interest into our relative and what makes him tick. And that's really gets my attention.
So many writers have taken this character in so many directions. Where do you want to take him?
Oh, boy. I mean, that's a great question because I've taken him in really two directions. So I've continued the novel Dracula with the first book that I wrote that came out in 2009. I continued the story because what's so cool is that at the end of Dracula, the ending is somewhat ambiguous. That the fact that the knife was thrust into Dracula's heart and caused him to crumble into dust and not a stake driven into his heart. To me, that is Bram Stoker saying, I'm not actually killing him. It's Dracula's way to escape because there was no wooden stake handy. And Bram went into great detail earlier in the novel to say the only way to kill a vampire is with a stake in the heart. Well, my idea was if he's not completely dead, he needs to recover, he comes back. Where is he going? And what about the son, the child that's born at the end of the novel? So he's still immortal. And, you know, I try to keep close to what Bram did, but, you know, modernize a little bit. Now, in the recent book, we go back to the very beginnings of Bram Stoker himself and try to figure out what would have been a plausible explanation for Bram writing this novel. And what is such a cool hook is that Bram really was an invalid child for the first 7 years of his life. We don't know what caused it. And it's like, okay, I can play with this. This is the hook a writer needs. Let's say instead of him being bloodlet by his uncle, that I really believe he was, maybe there was something in the blood that he got. Maybe there's some vampiric intervention. So what I did was, you know, fictionalize the real stuff that happened to his life and looked at what were people really believing at that time in the late 1800s about vampirism.
So I'm assuming you did not insert Abbott and Costello in there.
That's great. No, but, you know, even that is cool. It's like, to me, if what Bram created inspires people to go in many directions, and comedy is one of them. I mean, we could sit here for another half an hour and talk about all the comedy varieties of Leslie Nielsen, David Niven, all these other guys. That just shows that this product has sort of moved beyond just gothic horror, which I think is cool. And I think Bram would have thought that is really awesome.
Do you find that there is a definitive cinema version?
In my opinion, and boy, oh boy, do people have lots of different opinions on this. The BBC did a very faithful adaptation of the novel back in 1977. And Louis Jourdan was the Dracula character. And I still think that's the closest, most faithful adaptation of the novel But it's interesting that this novel is attracting good talent to reimagine it, to adapt it, to be inspired by it, even 123 years after this thing was published.
Dacre Stoker has co-authored two novels about the Dracula legend, a sequel called Dracula the Undead and a prequel called Dracul. He will be a guest at Pensacon this weekend, and you can hear our entire conversation at WWF.org. Bob Barrett, WWF News.